This is Andy Shore from Washington, D.C. with the Pulmonary and Critical Care Literature Update. I'd like to point out an article in the July 30th issue of the New England Journal of Medicine by the EPIC investigators from the Centers for Disease Control. This study focused on the microbiology and epidemiology of community-acquired pneumonia. We haven't had a good epidemiology study of community-acquired pneumonia in almost 2 decades, and so it was an important effort to look at the causes and frequency of admissions to the hospital for community-acquired pneumonia. Community-acquired pneumonia remains a leading reason for hospital admission and results in huge direct and indirect costs to the healthcare system. This was a well-done microbiologic and epidemiologic investigation where investigators in 2 cities, in Tennessee and in Chicago, looked at patients sequentially admitted to the hospital with a clinical diagnosis of community-acquired pneumonia, all of whom were required to have a radiographic evidence of an infiltrate and signs of symptoms of pneumonia, and then evaluated them in terms of their length of stay, their severity of illness, and then their microbiology. All patients who agreed to be in the study underwent significant microbiologic evaluation to include appropriate urinary antigens, serum antigen testing and various serologies, and of course, nasal and sputum cultures. What they looked at in terms of a primary endpoint was essentially the frequency or the burden of illness, and then the distribution of pathogens across the various diseases in terms of severity of illness and across the various age groups they looked at. Of the approximate 2,300 patients they investigated, which unfortunately was not everybody who was eligible for the study, about 70% of patients who were eligible for the study participated, so there's a concern here about generalizability and bias. Among those 2,300 patients, they only found an isolate or an organism in about 38% of patients. Strikingly, viral pathogens, predominantly rhinovirus and influenza, were more common than bacterial pathogens. When it came to bacterial pathogens, not surprisingly, the number one pathogen was pneumococcus. It's important to realize in this study who these authors did not include in the sample. They specifically excluded patients who were severely immunosuppressed, patients who had had PEGs or trachs, patients who had been recently hospitalized, and patients who were coming from nursing homes because of disability. Realize, therefore, they specifically excluded patients who would meet criteria for what we call today healthcare-associated pneumonia. So specifically, this study did look at community-acquired pneumonia as we classically conceive of it. And the findings are consistent with other trials historically. Overall, anywhere from a third to 70% of patients with a diagnosis of community-acquired pneumonia actually have some organism isolated, whether it be viral, bacterial, fungal, or mycobacterial. And again, the most common bacterial isolate often is, as you would expect, pneumococcus. Part of that's, reflects the fact that we have tests that are good at diagnosing pneumococcus, such as a urinary antigen. Part of it also reflects the fact that things such as flu will vary based on the seasonality of the study that you conduct. This study was strong in that it looked over a 30-month period with 2 respiratory winter seasons. And of course, what you saw was that during the change in season, flu peaked when you would expect flu to peak. And not surprisingly, following that, so did Staph aureus as a pathogen. It peaked following flu, again confirming the known relationship between Staph aureus superinfection and influenza infection generally. And that helps confirm the generalizability and face validity of these studies. What's interesting is that when they started looking at age groups and looking at older and older patients, as patients became older and older, they were more likely to require ICU-level care, and the pathogens became much more commonly isolated. So if you were an older patient, it was much more likely to isolate any pathogen, whether it be bacterial or viral, than if you were younger. And when you look specifically at the ICU patients, not surprisingly, what you saw was that in the ICU, isolates such as Enterobacteriaceae and Staph aureus were more common than on the floor. In fact, Staph aureus and Enterobacteriaceae were very rare causes of pneumonia in patients outside the ICU. On average, about 1 in 5 patients did require ICU-level care. About 1 in 20 patients actually required mechanical ventilation. The overall mortality for the cohort in hospital was about 2%, and they estimated that the incidence of disease was about 25 cases per 10,000 patients per year. That's very similar to a prevalence, or an incidence rather, that was noted about a decade and a half ago. These data therefore confirm what we've known, and more importantly, they benchmark what we've seen, which may change in the future given the introduction of the new vaccine for pneumococcus, particularly in adults, and that may change the distribution of pneumococci that we see in terms of both the serotypes of pneumococci and, importantly, the prevalence of pneumococci overall. So for those of us who care for patients with community-acquired pneumonia, which is anybody who does pulmonary and critical care medicine, I urge you to look at this study in the July 30th issue of the New England Journal of Medicine. This is Andy Shore from Washington, D.C.